and use it selfishly, because you'll become more entangled in karma in that way. That is the basic preaching. Work, but give the fruit to Krishna. Be detached. And the devotees, especially living in the temple, have to aspire for this platform. Completely detached work. For the devotees living outside the temple, they can come gradually to the position, first by becoming a little detached. If they're earning $2 billion a week, they can give $2 to Krishna as in the beginning a week, and then gradually it will be raised to 4, and then 6, and 10, and then all 2 billion will gradually come to Krishna every week. That's detached work, and that's actually proper. I saw Prabhupada one time talking to Hayagriva, Prabhupada in New Vrindavan, early 69, and Hayagriva was working in the university. He had a job as a professor, and he was giving all his money, not 50%, but he was giving all his money. He was a householder, married man, giving all his money to Prabhupada's project in New Vrindavan. And Prabhupada said, "You are more than a sannyasi," meaning that you are equal to a sannyasi. Why? Because you're completely detached from the fruit of your work and you are working. And Prabhupada criticizes here so heavily. It's a classic Prabhupada criticism. A sincere person who follows this method of working, using his senses and working and being detached, is far better situated than a false pretender, mityachar, who adopts show bottle spiritualism to cheat the innocent public. Show bottle spiritualism. Does anyone know what that term show bottle means? Yeah. Yeah, a bottle, and you think, oh, what great medicine, but it's only colored water. Show bottle medicine only. It cannot help anyone. So similarly, we shouldn't be show bottle spiritualist who artificially becomes a renunciate, but is not on the platform where he's yet pure enough to give up work. And then the Prabhupada says, a sincere sweeper in the street, which in India is more or less the lowest of all occupations, a sincere sweeper in the street is far better than the charlatan cheating meditator who meditates only for the sake of making a living. So it's better to be engaged properly according to our actual position. And it's the spiritual master's business. That's one of his expertise, is to engage the disciple according to his capacity. Sometimes the devotees fear surrendering. Of course not here. But in some places, sometimes devotees fear surrendering. What happens if I say I'll do whatever they tell me? And then what happens if they tell me something I can't do? So on one side, the devotees should not fear surrendering. They should do whatever. And on the other side, the management and the spiritual masters, etc., they engage people according to their capacity. So it works very nicely. And if on the side of the spiritual leadership, if there's improprieties and they don't start engaging people according to their capacity, and sometimes it happens, the leader doesn't act properly, and then just trying to squeeze more and more, then what happens is then the devotees start taking care of themselves and not wanting to surrender. So the proper relationship is that the devotees should surrender completely, and the spiritual leadership should act like parents and lovingly engage their dependents in such a way that they will make advancement. Sometimes they have to push. It's not my capacity. It is your capacity. Do it. Prabhupada really pushed people. But he gave the spiritual inspiration too, that gave people the the desire to go so far beyond what they thought their limits were. But he pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. He said, my spiritual master is pushing me and I am pushing you. And he pushed. Sometimes the devotees will have a very, I shouldn't say, just sentimental idea of who Prabhupada was and what the mood was. It wasn't all sweetness. It was all sweetness, but it was all pushing also. The sweetness came from the incredible enthusiasm that Prabhupada generated within the devotees to push on the Krishna consciousness movement through book distribution, through preaching in all parts of the world, through completely depending on Krishna. But it was pushed. Prabhupada was pushing and inspiring. Perform your prescribed duties. For doing so is better than not working. One cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. So one needs to work very, very hard in Krishna's service. So this important point, we hope that it will stick deeply in all our consciousnesses, that we have to work hard in Krishna's service. Now, starting, let's read the next verse. Text 9, and then we'll stop there, explains how to make that work, and this is what we all know, how to make the work achieve the benefits that one wants to achieve by not working. The Mayavadis want to give up work because they don't want to engage in karma and get the reactions and become entangled in material life. So how to get that same benefit of not becoming entangled in karma while still engaging the senses in work? So Krishna explains that in the next verse. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. And this is the key, that we work for Krishna. We work on His behalf. Otherwise, if we don't work on His behalf, that same work, maybe we're a businessman, maybe we're a manager, maybe we're a salesman, maybe we're a teacher, if we do that for Krishna, there will be no reaction and there will be no karma. Otherwise, if we don't do it for Krishna, our nature will force us to do that same work because we're forced to act helplessly according to the modes of material nature that control us. We have to work, and that work is controlled by the modes. If we work for Krishna, if that work is done for Krishna, if the senses are engaged for Krishna, then that work will bring no bondage, no karma. But otherwise, if we don't work for Krishna, work causes bondage in the material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, O Arjuna, perform your prescribed duty for His satisfaction. What is Arjuna's prescribed duty? Fighting. And who is the His that Krishna is speaking of? Vishnu. And who is the original Vishnu? Krishna. So Krishna is saying, you perform your prescribed duty, you fight for my satisfaction. And that actually is the highest thing. Working, doing one's work just for the pleasure of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. That is bhakti. Doing what they want for their pleasure is bhakti. Doing what we want for their pleasure is karma yoga. This is something technical. Doing what they want for their pleasure is bhakti. Doing what we want and giving the fruit to Krishna is karma yoga, which will lead to bhakti in this yoga ladder. But in any case, perform your prescribed duty for His satisfaction, and in that way, you will always remain free from bondage. That is called, the Sanskrit term for that is nishkam karma. It's actually even more than nishkam karma. Nishkam means with no desire. Kam means desire. Nishkam means no desire. And karma, work. So working with no selfish desire for the pleasure of Krishna is exalting in consciousness. It is glorious. And this is our basic preaching throughout the world, that people should work for Krishna, not selfishly. Okay. Tomorrow, we'll begin with at sort of the bottom rungs, stages of the yoga ladder. This basic principle was described by Krishna to Arjuna. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Maharaj.
Maybe it's getting ahead,
but the question, what's the difference between Nishkam karma and yoga? It's getting ahead, but I'll answer it. That when you surrender, when you work as you want and surrender the fruit to Krishna, it is technically called Nishkam karma yoga. When you surrender first to what Krishna wants and then work and then offer the fruit, that's called bhakti. That's the difference between patanam pushpam palam toyam, offer me a leaf, a fruit, a flower, water, and the next verse, which is yat karosi rajnasi, whatever you do, whatever sacrifices you offer, do that as an offering to me. Whatever you're doing, do it for me. And the other is, you do what I want. Give me a leaf, a fruit, a flower, or water. That's the difference. Nishkam karma is yat karosi rajnasi. And bhakti is patiram pushpam palam toyam. We won't get to that. We finished the third chapter, we're lucky. Yeah. Buddhi yoga, there's several meanings of Buddhi yoga. But that's one of the things that's described Buddhi yoga as karma yoga, which Arjuna didn't understand in the second chapter. So therefore, Krishna is going to expand all the instructions that he gave in the second chapter in the next, practically in the rest of the Bhagavad Gita. So therefore, the second chapter is entitled "The Contents of the Gita Summarized." So it's everything is mentioned in there. The topics that I listed at one point were as being in the second chapter. The Vedas, the modes of nature, karma yoga, karma kanda, jnana yoga, the soul, the super soul, sankhya yoga, jnana yoga, buddhi yoga, vedanta, the atma, bhakti yoga, detachment, vairagya, tyag, samadhi, sannyas. So these are basically the topics of the rest of the chapters. And then in the 18th chapter, the whole thing is summarized.
You said that the lust, passion gives birth to lust.
What?
Passion.
Yeah.
Gives birth to lust.
The what?
To lust. If the lust is born by passion. Everything comes from lust and it is born by passion. Then who gave birth to passion?
The modes of material nature, who gave that? That's created right at the beginning. That's one of the first things that come, is that, because without the mode of passion, the creation can't take place, because Lord Brahma is the personification of that, or the controlling deity of the mode of passion.
It sounds so that material desire gives birth to lust and lust to passion, but it's the opposite. What is the cause of passion?
See, the modes are all there. All the ingredients are there. So the question isn't, where does passion come from? The question is more, I think, what causes us to be influenced by the mode of passion? Right? So, that question, what causes us to be influenced? Passion causes passion. When you have one desire, see, there's a tendency for the mode of goodness. Say if you're, one of the results of the mode of goodness is happiness. See, it's very true, when Lord Brahma embodies the creative intelligence of Krishna, and he did such an incredible job in designing this prison, It's so subtle. You can't get out on your own. Daiviye shugunamayi mama maya duratiya. On your own, you cannot get out. Because even if you're in the mode of goodness, first of all, you can't be completely in the mode of goodness because there's nothing is pure in the material world. So if you're in the mode of goodness and something brings you happiness, you like to go out and just walk in nature gently in the sun-filled days and just relax and listen to the birds as they tweet in the trees and just the fragrance. So that's, say, the mode of goodness. But then, to get to that place, you have to work very hard. And you become attached to it. You become attached to that happiness. So attachment is the mode of passion. And you have to work to be able to buy your house in the countryside where you can do that. So the mode of goodness, because you like the happiness of the mode of goodness, that liking the happiness, just by doing that, will bring attachment, which brings the mode of passion. And the mode of passion, when you can't get it because you have so many other responsibilities, you can't get out there, then you get angry. And it degrades into the mode of ignorance. So there, just the very nature of how the material world is made, it's made to degrade one if one isn't following, surrendering to higher authority. And acting according, not to the way we want, and according to what we think will make us happy, because it will degrade us ultimately, even though it will seem very innocent in the beginning. No? Bala? The envy of Krishna is the cause of all our problems. That's anadiya bahimuk. Krishna bhule se jeev, anadiya bahimuk. That is the root problem, that we don't want to accept that we are just insignificant servants of Krishna. We're envious. We want to be Krishna, and if not Krishna, at least the best servant of Krishna.
And then everything starts with
passion. Everything starts with envy, yeah. As you're saying. And then it's all downhill from then on. Then we need a false ego. And then if you're envious of Krishna, you want to be God, you have to do something. You have to enjoy yourself, so you have enjoyment, you have to just get into trouble. You need a kingdom. And you have to acquire one, a kingdom. So the tendency is passion. And passion tends to degrade to ignorance, although it can be uplifted to goodness. And that's what's described in the 17th chapter, how to take our position in the material world and upgrade it to goodness instead of passion by following the Vedic scriptures. That's the purpose of the slow process of the Vedas, is to, wherever we are in the material world, to add, even our enjoyment should be done according to scriptural ways, so we elevate it. That's Krishna's mercy, that he gives us these systems.
Oh, I don't need ever think you were. I read that she rather writes that in Vedic society at the age of 50, when once society forces him to be so in this life of if one gives up prematurely certain activities, then he may become degraded. So in this life, could you please?
Yeah. Well, there are two points on that. One is that when one gives up household life according to the Vedic system at the age of 50, it's not for sannyas. It's just strictly according to the Vedic system. 25 years brahmachari, 25 years married, 25 years vanaprastha, theoretically, because we're talking theoretically. So it's vanaprastha. That means one travels with one's wife, but the relationship changes, the children are grown up, etc. So it's always gradual in the Vedic times, and even the sannyas goes through four different stages. One, you're living practically in the backyard of the house, and they're bringing you food, and then bahudak, and then gradually it comes to the point of Paripajakacharja, traveling, preaching. Second one, you're living on the edge of the village, and you're living in your village. Everyone knows you're there, so they bring you some food. And the third one, Paribhijakacharya, you leave the village and you go and preach. And Paramhamsa, you just don't care about the material world at all. It's you and Krishna, basically. So it's gradual and going through stages. The second point, that sannyas in Vedic times was actually not for everyone. It was for the higher classes, those who have not... It's not that one can be expected to live his life degraded as a bum and then at 50 take sannyas. It's not like that. The whole system is to gradually prepare us, to make us qualified. But yet, there is pressure on householders that... and that will be there in ISKCON too, whether everyone takes sannyas or not. But when one gets older, there's pressure on one to remind us that we're going to die soon. And that we better start preparing and thinking about what we're going to do in our next life and pull our consciousness out of this life and start preparing for the next life. So that pressure is very kindly, although it may not always be appreciated, but it will be there. To remind us that, yeah, this one life isn't all in all. So we should prepare for next life. And what's the best way to prepare? You should spend your time hearing and chanting, get less involved with wife and children, and earning money, etc. You've sacrificed your whole life for them. You've worked very, very, very hard. And the women also. And now, no more children at the age of 50. Children, you should calculate your life so the children are grown up by that time, so that you can pay, because to be a mother and do sadhana bhakti is very, very, very difficult. Very, very, very difficult. So think in terms of by the time you're 50, the children are somewhat grown up, so you can pay attention to hearing and chanting, attending the programs, etc. Like that. And then, and that becomes glorious because. The Matajis will also leave this world, not only the men, so they have to also prepare, and their circumstances are somewhat different, but they also have to prepare. So it's not that just the man takes sannyas, the Mataji, she also takes, we can call it a female form of sannyas, even though she may not be traveling and preaching, although in this day and age, the more advanced ladies will seem to do that also. But at least live with the children, being taken care of, don't have to worry about maintenance, and spend time hearing and chanting. Dress in white, give up material life, and hear and chant about Krishna. And allow our husband to advance as much as possible in this life before he leaves this body. Okay, Hare Krishna, Jai Shri Prabhupada. So tomorrow we'll move forward. We'll move to the bottom of the rung of the yoga ladder. Om Aganatim Mandasya Janajana Salakaya Chaksu Samanitam Jaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Datati Sapanjantika. Krishna has explained the activity, the active nature of the spirit soul, regardless of his position within the material world or the spiritual world, the soul will be active. It is his sarup. It is his nature. So our question, or the question that we should ask ourselves, knowing that we have to be active, what is the best kind of activity we can engage in? And what is the best kind of activity we can engage others in? So although this sounds like possibly an obvious question that requires a mechanical answer, everyone should just engage in devotional service and Krishna's service. In fact, there are common elements that everyone should engage in, such as the congregational chanting of the Lord's holy name, or hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, or hearing Bhagavad Gita, and associating with devotees. There are common activities for every taking prasadam, for all souls. But when it comes to practical engagement in one's life activities, one's activities, what one's actual engagement is going to be, one has to be engaged according to his advancement. And by being engaged on some level of devotional service in some way according to our advancement, every person will make further progress. And this is called the yoga ladder. Now, in the 10th verse of the third chapter, after describing that really speaking, everyone should serve Vishnu with activity, otherwise our work will bind us to the material world. In the 11th verse, in the 10th verse, Krishna begins explaining we called yesterday the bottom rung, or the lowest level of the yoga ladder. And he explains, in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods, along with sacrifices for Vishnu. And he blessed them by saying, be thou happy by this jaga sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. In text 11, the demigods, being pleased by sacrifice, will also please you. And thus, by cooperation between men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all. So what Krishna is explaining is the Vedic system, the basic Vedic culture and its system. And the prime principle of the Vedic system is that everyone followed the Vedic authority. It is not that in Vedic times everyone was a pure devotee and everyone was free from material desires. No. Actually speaking, everyone who comes into the material world is full of material desires. This is the very nature of someone in the material world, the conditioned nature. He's full of material desires, selfish desires. Desires with himself as the center, and he has a plan how he's going. He has a plan and desires how he's going to be happy, and it includes having a beautiful wife, many children, a powerful husband, possibly much land, much riches, strength, prosperity in so many different ways, good health. This is what people are full of. Everyone is full of desires like this within the material world. And it is not Krishna conscious. Because Krishna consciousness means our pleasure is based on the pleasure of Krishna. In the material world, we are here specifically because we don't want to give Krishna pleasure. We don't want to make Krishna the center of existence. We are envious of that position of Krishna's. We want ourselves to be the center. We want to create a whole illusion in which we are the most important person. And that everything is based on us and our desires and pleasing us. This is the material world, and everyone, not only every human, but every creature, every conditioned soul takes a material body, has desires like this, that I am the center. And I'm going to control as much as possible to try to become happy, because my business is to become happy. And I'm looking at all of you in the frame of references, all your business is to make me happy. I'm looking at you as instruments of my pleasure, my selfish pleasure. This is what it means to be in conditioned life. And everyone has an illusion like this, that we are the center, that we are the most important. This is called Maya. We cannot be happy like that, but yet we have a hope against hope. If I could just fulfill this desire and then this desire and remove this obstacle, then I will be happy. This is Maya. And if I can't be completely happy, I'll block out or push away from my mind all the things that will make me unhappy, and I will live in my illusory existence trying to squeeze as much happiness as possible. Now, this is the nature of the conditioned soul. But what should he do? He has this nature. And he has to be active. He has those desires. So his choice, if he is not purified, isn't whether or not to act to fulfill those desires with himself as the center, but rather, it is how to act in illusion. Which way, which direction and illusion I shall go in. So the Vedic system teaches how these passionate desires, which are based on illusion, with our self as the center, can be purified, although while we are trying to satisfy them. So the first step in the Vedic system, and again, this is the common point in the Vedic culture, is everyone follows the principles of the Vedas to fulfill their material desires. There are ways to fulfill one's material desires that will gradually purify you. And there are ways to try to fulfill your material desires that will degrade you. These material desires are born of passion. So to gradually purify that passion till it becomes goodness and doesn't degrade into ignorance. This is what the Vedic system, the Vedic culture teaches. So the first principle is, I'm not going to whimsically fulfill my ambitions for sense gratification. I'm going to strictly follow the Vedic instructions, the Shastra, the scriptures, and try to become materially happy by using the scriptural methods. So instead of trying to become happy by doing whatever we want, we accept, no, I will follow the authority of the Vedas. And what will I do? I will worship the demigods. And by the mercy of the demigods, which is ultimately the mercy of Krishna, I get my wealth, I get my happiness, I get my health, I get my beautiful wife, I get my powerful sons, I get a prosperous next life in which I will enjoy in Swarga Loka in heaven, in the beautiful gardens of heaven. I will do this through the Vedic system. Now, materialists, in this day and age, they will not follow the system. And rather than becoming purified, they will become degraded. Why? Because there is no acceptance of authority, at least in the Vedic system, although the desire for sense gratification is there. But at least everyone accepts there is a power higher than me. If I want to be happy, I will worship the demigods, and by their grace I will get material prosperity. That means there is at least someone more powerful than me. And someone who is a bigger controller than me, that I have to please. But in contemporary society, and it's happening more and more every day, no one will accept that at all, that anyone is more worthy of respect than me. Anyone is an authority more than me. No, I am the center. No one is more important than me. I don't have to please anyone. I will do whatever I want. I don't care for anyone's rule, anyone's regulation. I will do what I want. And therefore, that type of mentality degrades one into ignorance. I have my own plan how I'm going to be happy. I'll cut my hair and leave a pink strip in the middle. I'll kill my children. I'll eat monkey brains. I'll eat human fetuses. Yes. I'll have unlimited intercourse with unlimited women, unlimited men, unlimited women and men, man and man. I have my own plan. And the result of following no authority is the worst, lowest kind of degradation. And yet everyone is convinced that we are making progress, and this is the nature of Maya, illusion. You ask anyone who doesn't read, who isn't in contact with the Krishna consciousness movement, or very religious, because all religious people actually understand this. But you ask anyone who isn't religious, you ask 99% of the people, 99.9% of the people, and everyone thinks things are getting better and better. Although people's suffering and fear and anxiety increases day by day by day by day. And we could give one of those classes where we can just condemn contemporary civilization and explain how people are afraid to go out at night. This didn't happen 20 years ago, 30 years ago. I know New York City has one of the worst images in public relations in the world, that everyone who is not from New York thinks that that any time you walk down the streets of New York, you're going to get jumped and beat up. Although it may happen, I'm not denying that. But when I was a child even, we never used to lock our doors at night or anything like that, living in New York City. Never. We would never lock the doors at night. There was no fear like that. Families were together. But now, divorce, the children grow up with no father and mother, is so rare that any child today, not rare, but 50%, 40%, 60%, 70% of children will not have both mother and father together. And they grow up in a scarred way because of that. And then they try to get married and they don't know how. And their children are worse. And drugs and the murders in the school and the shootings and it's horrible, horrible, horrible. And yet, by the potency of Maya, everyone is thinking all things are getting better. Why? Because the computers are getting better, the videos are getting better, so everyone is satisfied. Everyone is getting the most peculiar and dread diseases. And yet everyone thinks we're making progress in science, etc. How wonderful. This is illusion. This is Maya. And the result of this is the whimsical attempt for sense gratification, not based on authority, not based on accepting that someone knows more than me. It's just that I'm going to figure out what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it. And you can't stop me, and if you try, you're my enemy, and I'm going to kill you. This is contemporary civilization, in fact. If you get in the way of my sense gratification, you're finished. So this is the first principle of the Vedic system, that they accept authority And that authority is the Vedic rules and regulations. And the result of that is just as Krishna says over here, people will actually enjoy. They will actually enjoy. Be thou happy by this jaga. It will, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. In other words, it will purify. And it is by worshipping the demigods. And this is what people understand generally as Hinduism or the Vedic system, the worship of the demigods. But it is one small part of it. Even though it encompasses many, many Vedic verses, it is just the lowest rung of the Vedic ladder, so that people will accept authority to fulfill their material desires and accept that someone is more high than me, and if someone greater than me is pleased, then and then only will I enjoy myself and be happy. Now people won't accept anyone as worthy of being pleased. No one is worthy of being respected. And therefore society becomes more and more degraded. Text 11, the demigods being pleased by sacrifice will also please you. And thus by cooperation between men and demigod, prosperity will reign for all. Text 12, in charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of jaga, you have to satisfy them, they will supply all necessities to you. You're active, you have material desires, and act in this way if you are a materialist, and become elevated to the mode of goodness. Let your passion become elevated. And how does your passionate desire to become elevated? Because when you are performing the sacrifice to the demigods, you are taking your possessions, and because of your material selfishness, you are offering them something. That takes some faith, and that takes some detachment, and that also takes some knowledge that something is higher, that I will give up my hard-earned wealth for the sacrifice, and I have faith. And gradually, by the Vedic system, in this way, that will purify us. When you perform the Vedic sacrifice to the demigods, the Brahmins are sitting there. And what do? They perform the sacrifice, but they also give class. They also speak from the Puranas or the Upanishads. And what do they say? They tell Puranic stories. And we hear in the Puranic stories many, many things. We hear we hear that yes, I can get, we hear of so many others who perform sacrifices, and we hear of higher sacrifices that gain us a next life in Swarga Loka or in Chandra Loka on the moon planet or in some heavenly planet where the happiness is even greater than just the happiness of having good health and a good crop, and the rains are coming. We hear that our next life we can get even greater happiness. So we become eager to perform sacrifices to Indradev or some other demigod so we can go to a higher place in our next life to enjoy more. But understanding that we can go to a higher place in our next life makes us clearly understand what? That we're not the body, because we're accepting that there is a continuity from this life to the next life. Yes, I will enjoy in my next life, I will take a different body, a heavenly body, and enjoy even more. That means I am not this body, and I am not that heavenly body. There is a soul that is transmigrating. And because people are performing the sacrifices, they're getting the results, so therefore their faith is increasing. And therefore, the faith in the Shastra is increasing. And the faith in the priests are increasing. And therefore, spiritual concepts using this Vedic system gradually become implanted in the consciousness of even a materialistic person who is interested in enjoying. Why enjoy on this earth planet when you can enjoy in heaven? So go there in your next life. But then, after performing those sacrifices to go to Swargaloka, they hear that sometimes the demons, the asuras, attack the suras, and even Indradev has to hide within the stem of a lotus out of fear. And sometimes they hear how even the heavenly planets are annihilated, completely destroyed. So that means that there is no peace and satisfaction even there. And they begin to question what is even higher than that. Since I'm a soul and I'm eternal and I transmigrate from this body to the next, and there is fear even there, then where should I go? Where should this eternal soul go? And then when they're on that stage, they start getting transcendental knowledge. Then the Upanishadic sections of the Vedas come in, and we hear that aham brahmasmi, that we are souls, we're eternal, that we don't have anything to do with this body at all. And when we're performing these sacrifices, and we're trying to enjoy, but how could you enjoy knowing that there is no there's going to be suffering later on? So gradually, by this knowledge, by hearing I'm a soul, that there is a different enjoyment